Why nonviolent?
Why nonviolent? Because violence invites the other side to up the ante. It justifies the other side going to more and more extreme measures to rub you out. Because the thing is, in any struggle, there are two sides sort of carrying the main work of the struggle, the status quo, the force of the status quo, and then the force of the opposition. And then you have a lot of bystanders. It can start out being 80% of the population is just watching and trying to make up its mind and so on and so on, right? A kind of passive watching for the most part. And what you need to do is convince a lot of those people, not all of them, but you need to convince a substantial number of them to be sympathetic to your side in order to overthrow the forces of the status quo. But if you start using violence, then a lot of those people think, oh, well, that's really terrible. That's really violation of, you know, the norms. I mean, it's breaking law and order, so on, so on, so on. Now, they will still do that to some degree when there's a Martin Luther King comes along and engages in civil disobedience and so on, but it's not nearly as scary for them. They can still perceive what's being said, what the message is, if it's being said backed up by nonviolence, by the drama of nonviolence. But when the drama of nonviolence turns into violence, a lot of people stop thinking and just go back to the status quo out of sheer fear. That's not what we want. So violence is counterproductive.
You're saying that nonviolent actions are more effective.
Far more effective. In fact, political scientists who I know went to the trouble of cataloging national level struggles. So this would not include some of the things we were talking about, but only struggles that were national in scope, like the Serbian struggle. And they looked at those struggles from 1900 to 2006. It's quite a lot of struggles all over the world. And they divided them into nonviolent struggles and violent struggles. And then one of the things they looked at was which turned out to be more effective. They found that the people's movements who chose nonviolent means were twice as likely to win as the people's movements that chose violent means. Twice as likely.
In addition, if any campaign states in some kind of founding document that they are committed to nonviolence, that could come in handy in a court of law.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you know an example of something where people, maybe there was an infiltrator who was there to stir things up, as we know with the COINTELPRO activities of the 60s and 70s, a tangible example of some time when that happened, when we said no, some violence broke out, but they could show that they were not dedicated to that because of their charter or something.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right in my own city in Philadelphia, there came to be a young people's group during the civil rights movement that said, okay, we're in the North, but we're in solidarity with black people's struggle. So let's form an anti-racist organization and let's work to work against discrimination in our own city in Philadelphia and so on. This would be late 60s. And so they formed a group. A lot of the leadership lived in the same apartment because that was convenient, low rent, that kind of thing. And they had their office there and so on. So it was a fairly typical phenomenon, you know, of the 60s. And there they were. And when somebody said, well, we're going to be nonviolent, right? So let's say that, tell the media that and so on. We're this wonderful new young people's nonviolent group. And most people said, no, we don't want to do that because the Black Panthers might consider that to be out of solidarity with them and so on and so on. There's this problem, that problem with that. So while we, in fact, will do nonviolent activities, let's not make a deal about that. Let's just say, well, we're just doing actions, right? So, however, their actions were highly effective. More and more people were joining them. They were becoming more and more effective. It got to be a problem for the city government, which at that time was run by pro-racist leadership. And so the city government decided, let's do this group in. So, easy thing to do, but the group didn't see this coming. Suddenly, in the middle of the night, police raid, apartment full of police, you know, rousing people out of beds and so on, forcing them all into the same bedroom and frisking them, you know, and saying, we're going to search this apartment. We're going to find out. We believe that, you know, we have to. And so they were, quote, searching the whole apartment. And funny thing, in the refrigerator, they found explosives. Well, of course, they planted them because they weren't there. But anyway, so they, quote, found explosives. And then that nailed the group. And it destroyed the group. And the group had no defense because they, even though their entire track record had been nonviolent, they had been unwilling to make a deal out of that.
Right.
And so they had no defense. So that's another reason why not only does it make sense to use nonviolent tactics and nonviolent strategy, but also to make a big deal out of it, as Dr. King, who would have been, you know, I mean, he would have been destroyed very, very early. The FBI was looking and looking and looking for ways to destroy him. And one reason why he lived as long as he did and was effective as long as he did was because he made such a big deal out of nonviolence.